Please note that the views expressed on this program are those of the individuals who speak them, and not necessarily those of Portsmouth Community Radio, its Board of Trustees, members, volunteers, or underwriters. Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. Good evening and welcome once again to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. I am your host, Willie Hassel, your gatekeeper to the dark side, your guide to the realm of the unknown, the unseen, the unthinkable. And she is the always lovely. She is the mystical. She is the mysterious. And she is Lynn Nickerson.
Good evening, Willie. How are you doing?
I am doing fine. How are you doing tonight?
Good, just fine, thanks.
Good.
We're off to a late start, aren't we?
Yeah, a little bit late. But I was just informed that Craig is not coming in, so...
Ah. If guess we could snatch a few minutes actually, from his hour.
We could actually make it up on the other end.
That would be nice.
If we wanted to.
Okay. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about.
All right. So, shall we get right to it then?
Yes, let's do that.
And I will introduce tonight's guest.
Okay.
So, tonight on Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience, it is a pleasure tonight to welcome to the show Ingrid P. Dean. Ingrid is retired from the Michigan State Police Department with over 21 years on the force, from road patrol to major crimes detective. She is also a state-licensed polygraph examiner and taught the art of detecting truth and deception. She holds a BA in art from Wayne State University and is a professional artist, musician, and writer. Her first book, Spirit of the Badge, began as a culminating project for her master's degree in transpersonal psychology, and then grew from there when more police officers began to share their extraordinary stories. So now her two books, Spirit of the Badge and True Police Stories of the Strange and Unexplained, contain many fascinating stories of the true life paranormal experiences from the law enforcement community. So we are welcoming to Spirit Radio tonight, Ingrid P. Dean. Welcome, Ingrid.
Hi, Ingrid.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for joining us.
You bet.
How are you doing tonight?
I am great. Hawaii is doing well, and the sun is shining.
Excellent.
Well, that's good.
We're envious.
What is it, 2 o'clock in the afternoon for you? Or?
It's 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
So we're about 6 hours behind
six
you.
6 hours. Right. Are there two time zones in Hawaii?
No, it's just the one time zone, but we don't do daylight savings time.
That's what it is. Okay, because I had a little map, and I referred to that, and it said 7, so that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Discrepancy. Well, first of all, Ingrid, I want to thank you for writing this book because it's not only chock full of wonderful stories, but it serves to highlight the trials and tribulations that are faced by law enforcement officials at a time in our social structure when their contribution is sorely underappreciated. And that, of course, is in reference to the chaos in the streets that we're facing right now. And also, your book focuses on the human element, which I think is very important, and that would be as officers attempt to maintain law and order, they're caught in the crosshairs of being human and vulnerable themselves. So I think it's important to recognize that. And I, for one, I'm looking forward to your next book because it was just really such a good read.
Oh, thank you.
Very well done.
You know, I tried to focus on exceptional human experiences and to try to show that officers are human, too. And you're right. Right now, you know, things are going real negative on the pendulum, so to speak. And it seems
it's
to go back and forth as the years go by, you know?
But right now, it seems to be really, really on the downside.
It's like it's peppered across the nation.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah. I just pray about it, you know?
Yes.
You try to put good vibrations out there and positive energy and, you know, realize that things are always shifting and changing.
Mm.
So, yeah, positive energy is important.
It's such a hard job to start with,
That's right.
I mean, they don't need people making it worse for them.
So often they're just...
It's stressful, but, you know, oftentimes we don't even realize it in our work because we get so used to, you know, answering complaints and going to people. Sometimes we don't even realize the stress until later when we decompress.
And how do you do that?
Exercise. Exercise is good. Good physical activity and lots of hobbies.
Yeah, hobbies and sometimes a good old bar. Telling you stories, the bartender.
Well, I didn't want to say that. But you know, sometimes a glass of wine is nice too.
That's right. So, did you go to Hawaii to retire, or did you work on a force there?
I found another job working for the Hawaii Police Department. So now I work as a civilian doing polygraph examinations and forensic artwork.
So you're doing that. I was wondering if you were going to continue with that because it's such a talent.
You know, I didn't want to let go of the skills.
Yeah.
You know, I really, you know, enjoyed the work. And so I thought, you know, just because I'm retired doesn't mean that I have to stop working.
Yeah, you're not dead.
No. Exactly.
Oh, that's wonderful. I've got to ask you, there's got to be a lot of intuitive, I don't know, guesswork when you're doing that. And then you draw the picture once you've got like a face reconstructed. Is that right?
You know, it's interesting. I was trained by the FBI on how to do composite drawings and how to interview, you know, victims or witnesses of crimes. And so there is, you know, a certain protocol and standards that we utilize when we're interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
But the intuitive aspect does come into play, you know, as you're interviewing the person, you know, what to ask and how to ask it, and, you know, looking at that person's personality becomes important if they're going to open up for you and be able to remember something that they may have only seen for a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So, I try to use my intuitive skills in everything. I just try to integrate it into practical work. You know, I think the intuition goes together with common sense,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Do you sometimes, like, reconstruct a face? Do you work with the clay to reconstruct a face?
I do. I did one just a few months ago, in fact, and it was a person that had died in a fire that didn't have identification on him. And all that remained were partial clothing, some skeletal remains.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, I took the skeleton and had it looked at by an anthropologist, and they determine whether it's male or female and the approximate age. And they give me some basic information, and then I actually take the skull and put tissue depth markers and clay on the in order to develop a face.
Mm-hmm. So the tissue death markers, you know, that's not an exact science either because the fat on people's face and tissue is distributed differently. So there's got to be some intuition involved in there.
Well, actually, there's some scientific corroboration there. And we actually use actual measurements that are consistent with, like, someone who's European Caucasian or someone who is Black African American or someone who is Asian. And there's kind of a standard list
template
of measurements.
Yeah.
So actually there is some science on that part.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Really. Well, then, I know that your personal entries cover a range of emotions, from listening to your inner voice to experiencing psychometry. You experience karma, a near-death vision, and some heartbreaking emotions. So I wanted to start with some of your stories first and also ask you, Ingrid, at what point did you realize that you were aware of the other side, you were aware of a sixth dimension or a sixth sense?
Very young.
Really?
Very young. I started getting premonitions when I was like 8 or 9 years old, and they became more and more intense, you know, as I got into my teens and I was predicting things and seeing lights and orbs that I just knew intuitively were people without bodies.
Oh, my gosh. That it's so unlikely that you got into a police work with that kind of leaning and aptitude, because that's really more artistic.
It is. I think the metaphysical world is an art, and you know, kind of integrating that into law enforcement and you know, day-to-day experiences is interesting. And I think it actually made me a better police officer.
Well, yeah, I think you melded the two of them very well.
Yeah, it's a blending of the metaphysical and the science part of scientific end of police work.
With using your intuition.
Yeah.
It sure is, and I think that many police officers are very aware of their gut instinct and intuitive skills. They
very
just
important.
Don't always express it in a metaphysical way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may express it as being a coincidence or I went with my gut instinct, but they're very keen, I think, and they integrate it into their work without even knowing sometimes.
Yeah, well, it's a part of your survival instinct to listen to your gut instinct.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I could ask, are you a Pisces by any chance?
I'm a Scorpio.
Oh,
so all my friends are Pisces, though.
That makes sense. But you, it seems like you have such a Piscean nature sensitivity, because Pisces, well, Scorpios too are very psychic as well.
Well, you picked up my water sign.
Well, yeah. Perhaps you have Pisces rising.
Probably.
But to get into maybe breaking the rules, I wanted to start with that, where you saved the life of an anaphylactic child, at least a child who's in anaphylactic shock, and that you actually broke the rules of what you were supposed to do, like you should have called an ambulance, and you decided to put the child in your car and race to the hospital. And those people, the parents, were going to be racing in the wrong direction because they didn't know that the hospital had closed. So would you like to continue the story? That was fascinating.
Well, and it is, you know, it's an exceptional heart-oriented experience. You know, you may not call it, you know, paranormal, you know, that level, but certainly my intuition came into play.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a new trooper on the road, and I had stopped this vehicle going about 100 miles an hour. And at the time I stopped it, I already intuitively knew that something was wrong.
Something else was
going on.
You know,
I mean, I've stopped cars that go fast before, but this one you could feel it, you know. And the driver jumps out of his car, and he says his son was, you know, stung by a bee. And, yeah, he was literally dying. His throat was all swelled up and very, very labored breathing.
Mm.
So, you know, ordinarily you would call the ambulance, but I also knew that traffic was backed up. It would probably take the ambulance longer to get to the location than it would be for me to just take the boy, put him in the car, and rush him to the hospital, which is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I caught a little bit of slack for that because there's a certain liability, you know, that is involved sometimes, you know, in those kinds of situations. And taking him into my car and taking to the hospital was against the rules. If I had not done it, though, I found out through the doctor that the child would have died because he was that close, you know, to death.
Yeah.
So the story is about my intuitive actions that I took, you know, to get the boy to the hospital in time to save his life. So it was very memorable for me.
Yeah, and even after you got reprimanded and you didn't get a life-saving award, you still got a letter from the governor.
Well, I did, and that made it all the worth. You know, I never tried to look for awards and things like that, but, you know, police officers, we really don't talk about our accomplishments too much with each other because it's kind of just our job, you know?
Yeah, and in a case like that, saving the life was the,
was the reward.
Whichever way you want to put it.
Yeah.
A lot more important than a plaque or something you can put on your wall.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
the parents
and
grateful.
I kept in touch with the family too.
Oh, did you?
You know, I have Facebook now, and kind of, you know, and I, so it's nice to, you know, connect every once in a while, and they're still grateful.
How old was the child at the time?
Oh, I'd say he was 10, 11 years old.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, maybe a little younger. I'm thinking younger. He was more like 7 as I picture him now.
Laying on his mother's lap, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good story. All right.
Thank you.
The second one, the interrogation, that one kind of blows my mind, too, because it's a case of psychometry. You shook this gentleman's hand, and you just knew that there was something off with him. And that's happened to me, and it's a creepy feeling. Creepy.
Yes. And it's, and I think it happens with people who are naturally empathic. You know, when you touch someone and you feel their vibes, you know, so to speak. And there's actually, you know, many officers that are aware of that and that are empathic themselves, and that, you know, just by the power of one touch, you know, on the shoulder or a nudge or whatever it may be, you pick up on things. And, you know, in this particular case, I was called, you know, by a small police department who asked me to run a polygraph, you know, on a suspect who was believed to have caused the disappearance of a 13-year-old girl. And the man had been to her house a week prior after having just met the girl's mother at a bar. And he was just out of prison after like a 10-year sentence. And he had befriended the family. So he had helped repair their car. He spent Saturday night on that weekend. And then a week later, the mother had been partying all night and had left her kids at the home by themselves. And when the mother returned home, she found that her daughter was missing. And this was a, you know, an all-A student who loved her friends, and she had no reason to run away. And the police, you know, were looking at the scene, and they found a corner of the suspect's prison ID card that was stuck in the latch of the door. And the suspect had given the excuse to the police that he had demonstrated to the mother how she could break into her own house if she ever lost her keys.
Well, that was quick
and
thinking on his part.
For him to come up with an excuse like that.
Yeah.
But already I knew things weren't jiving, and the police knew they weren't jiving either. So long story short, I interviewed the man, and he did confess to killing the child. But the story shares more about the intuitive things that I picked up on. The handshake was quite significant, you know, just before the interview, and then what happened shortly after he confessed to the crime. So,
because he came up behind you, didn't
story
he?
For me, lots of intuition was involved that I used, you know, along with my skills as a police officer.
When you looked at him, apparently he just looked like sort of a halfway normal businessman, right?
Yeah, he had, you know, puppy brown eyes. He was fairly handsome. What I found interesting when I reflect back on that story and I recall the interview, you're so in the zone sometimes as an investigator, and it almost puts you in a different space when you're very intense and trying to resolve a situation. And I looked at a videotape many years after, and I didn't even know the guy had a stutter. He had a very obvious verbal stutter that I was completely forgotten. And I just mentioned the zone because I think everybody's experienced it, where they are just so focused on something that all the things that are not trivial are forgotten. Only what's important is remembered or intuitively taken in. You know what I mean?
And what did the stuttering tell you?
Yeah.
What did the stuttering tell you, Ingrid?
Oh, intuitively that something was, again, wrong.
Yeah,
you know,
some
and
kind
it's
of psychological.
Not uncommon for people to get nervous and to do things that they're not even aware of. He may not even know that he was stuttering as he was.
When you looked at him, though, did his eyes give you a clue?
They gave me a clue that he had some deep issues that, you know, I mean, it would probably take a psychologist, you know, years to, you know, look at and dive into. So I could see that in his eyes, that there were some very serious issues going on.
And the bottom line was the little girl was murdered, but at least he agreed to show where the body was located. Did he eventually do that?
Yes. Good. And I think that goes with being empathetic and sympathetic to these people. You know, the only difference between a criminal and a good guy is the acting out of issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have healing needs, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I think criminals somehow act upon, you know, those issues.
Yeah, they have less of a moral filter, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and also, too, he came up behind you, and you just had a feeling that you had to act differently. Would you tell him that he was doing the right thing?
Well, you know, police officers, you know, when something good happens and, you know, this person had just told me that he knew, you know, that he remembered where the body was at and that he would show us where the body was at. And so we were excited and, you know, we were patting each other on the back and shaking hands. And then I don't know what it was, a pit in my stomach or something, but I knew that he was behind me. And when I turned around, I knew he had seen us all, you know.
High-fiving each other,
hands.
Yeah.
Yes, high-fiving, and I thought, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I got to shake his hand, too. And they were just happy that he's telling the truth and that we're going to be able to recover the little girl and that there's going to be some closure for her family. So I did. I turned around and I shook his hand, and I was glad I did. Because when somebody sees all that high-fiving, they can just change their mind.
Right, he could have felt alienated immediately and been stubborn and refused to show where the body was.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, how is it that you won him over? And I guess you answered the question, it's through empathy.
It is.
Yeah.
You got to remember that we're all human, we're on this planet, and that it's a school.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
You know, I kind of believe in the concept of karma, you know, and we're all, you know, working with our issues and things happen. And just maintaining that very neutral vibration with empathy and sympathy is what made him entrust in me, you know, to tell me what happened. So I was happy about it.
Yeah.
And,
you really made that work for you.
Yeah. And I say work for us, you know, because you know, we're servants. The police are servants for everybody, and we got to help each other.
I didn't mean it in the sense of service to self, but at least you made the whole situation work out that you didn't wind up screwing it up in the end, you know, without being intuitive might have happened. No, it's excellent. Well, Karmic Happenings is another situation. Well, as you were mentioning karma, and you really had some quick feedback on Karmic Happenings from page 112.
Oh, I love that. That's probably one of my favorite
stories. Incredible.
And it's, you know, it's synchronistic in nature. You know, like, what are the odds? That kind of a story. And you know, that was in the beginning of my career as well, and I just remembered stopping this car for speeding, and the driver hops out of the car, and he starts begging me not to arrest him because he knows he's got a warrant for a suspended license.
Uh-oh.
So he starts telling me, and he's all teary-eyed, and he says, you know, I have this first-time date with a girl, and I just know that she's the one, and if you arrest me right now, we're never going to get married, and it's just going to change my whole life. And I don't know what it was, you know, usually, you know, I would say, get back in the car,
yeah.
And I probably, you know, would arrest him.
He knew,
you know,
just what to say.
Tell somebody else, yeah.
I don't know what the matter was with me at the time, but I think it was intuition, mm-hmm. and something told me to just let him go. I got his promise that he'd show up in court, and I, you know, gave him the ticket for the suspended license, but I let him go. And, you know, we do have the power of discretion, mm-hmm. as a police officer. We don't have to arrest everybody. You know, we can be human.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 years later, you know, I hadn't thought about him again because he obviously showed up in court. You know, I didn't get called to court, so I thought everything went well. But 2 years later, I stop a different person who is looks to be intoxicated. It's below zero weather, it's snowy outside, and I end up getting into a fight with this person because he doesn't want to be arrested. So then this huge 18-wheeler truck stops behind my patrol car, and the truck driver gets out and helps me contain and arrest the man. You know, he helps me put him in the car, helped me get cuffs on him. He was a big man, and I think I was all about 5'2", 125 pounds at the time. But what was so amazing is that as I'm brushing snow off of my uniform, the truck driver asked me, he says, so you don't know who I am, do you? And I kind of looked at him sheepishly, and I said, no, but thank you so much, you know, for helping me.
But you look familiar.
And I did. I said, but you look familiar, you know, trying to kind of cover myself. And he said, I'm the man that you stopped 2 years ago who you let go for a suspended license. And he said, I got my truck driver's license. I got everything in order. And I wanted you to know that I really married that girl.
That's so neat.
I thought, that is so sweet. It was a lovely story. It was very synchronistic.
Yeah,
I was in a different part of the state. So I wasn't even in the area where I had stopped him 2 years ago. So it just made it kind of karmic.
Oh, truly. He completely turned his life around, and he got the opportunity to tell you so.
He didn't think the marriage would have ever happened if I had not let him go.
That's a heavy burden, Ingrid.
It was interesting.
The marriage better work out now.
Yeah, let's hope it does. It sounds like it was a good thing. Well, that's just an amazing story. Well, Ingrid, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have to take a quick break.
Okay.
So we're going to come back in just a moment, and don't go away.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
All righty.
Supernatural Magazine, the UK's newest paranormal magazine, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. You are listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on WSCA 106.1 FM, and we'll be right back after this short break.
And Lynn, we have some more guests coming.
Yeah, we've got some more guest lists here, starting with October 27th. We're welcoming Gare Allen, and he's got a new book out.
I think you mean August
27th. What did I say?
You said October.
Did I? Uh-oh. September 27th.
August 27th.
Did I say September? August, okay.
You want a calendar?
Gear Allen. I'm looking at one. I can't talk English. Gear Allen has a book out. It's called The Dead, and he's been psychic ever since he was a child as well, and he's written a book about that. September 3rd, right now we're going to have an open discussion, but we haven't decided on the topic. It'll be between Willie and I. September 10th, we're welcoming Norm from Norm and Friends. We were recently on his TV show. He is a visionary. So he's going to be a guest of ours, and he's going to be offering some prognostications to anybody who would like to contact us, and perhaps he'll give us some advice as well. Let me see, on September 17th, again, another open discussion between Willie and me. September 24th, we're welcoming Ronnie LeBlanc and Bill Penning, and they have both, they're co-authors on a book called Monsterland, and it focuses on odd events that happen in the Leominster State Park in Leominster, Massachusetts. There have been sightings from Bigfoot to UFOs and so forth, and it's a very odd area. And then October 1st, we're welcoming back Rocky Elmore. He is a Border Patrol, I'm a retired Border Patrol agent. He wrote a book, Out on Foot, and we're going to be focusing on the tale of Officer Santiago. He's half the book is about him anyway, and we didn't get a chance to speak about him in depth. So he's going to return, so that'll be interesting.
And we look forward to that.
We certainly do.
We do. But we also look forward to going back to the phone.
Yes.
Right now with tonight's guest, Ingrid P. Dean. Welcome back, Ingrid.
Hi. Thank you.
Hi, Ingrid. Let me see. Where did we leave off? We were talking about your last karmic episode. We wrapped that up, and I wanted to just one more. There's several others I want to touch on. You know, we can possibly go over the hour, too, since the DJ that follows us is not going to be coming in, so.
Okay.
Perhaps
you know, I was thinking, you know, I've shared, you know, the few stories that I contributed to the book, but there were, gosh, at least 60 police officers all over the country and Canada who have submitted stories. And, you know, they're very paranormal in nature, you know, like angels and apparitions. Symbols, signs, and synchronicity, and all sorts of unexplainable phenomena. And they really entrusted me when they shared their stories. And I just was so honored, you know, that they could take topics that were generally not, you know, discussed, not even among themselves, and to actually, you know, allow me to compile their experiences into one book, actually two. So I'm anxious to share some of their stories.
Okay, how about
absolutely
one that Willie really wanted to focus on tonight was Spirits of the North.
Yeah, Spirits of the North. I thought that was
from
an interesting
the gentleman who worked security in Alaska, and I believe it was Anchorage. That was a creepy story, working in that old building all by himself. Do you recall that one, Anchorage?
Actually, that was it was the police station, wasn't it?
Well, it was a town. It was
and,
a town building.
You know, his name's Officer Alan White, and he works now for the Clare County Police Department. He submitted a few different paranormal, heart-oriented stories in both books. There's two books: True Police Stories of the Strange and Unexplained, and then the first book is called Spirit of the Badge, which is my independent version of the same book. And Alan, when he shared about his experience in Skagway, Alaska, it was a department that where most everybody else knew that it was haunted, except for him, because he had just started on the job.
Oh, I forgot
and
to tell him that.
You know, the story is very humorous, and you know, some officers write really, really well, and then other officers write, you know, sometimes like a police report. But his story is particularly humorous.
It's quite
funny.
He
talks about all the sorts of creaks and groans and murmurs of the building, and he shares about an evening on the midnight shift when he first realizes that the place has a ghost, one or more. And he talks about a door that keeps slamming shut, and he finally locks it, and then he goes back to his typing, and then that same door opens and slams shut again, and there's nobody in the building but him.
And this happened several times on the first night, right?
Then he starts thinking, maybe there's a ghost.
Just maybe.
Yeah. So it's a nice, amusing, lighthearted story, but I've had many conversations with Alan White, and he's a police officer with many paranormal experiences.
Oh, really?
I was just so glad I found him.
Oh, yeah, that is a funny story. Do you know if he ever determined who the ghost might be?
You know, I never asked him, and I probably should have. That's a good question.
Because there was somebody stomping around upstairs, and when he'd say, knock it off, they'd stop doing it.
Yeah, he finally got so used to the person, to the ghost, that, you know, he communicated and he started to get along with the ghost. So.
Well, usually you can, in interactive hauntings, in intelligent hauntings, you can get a response. There seems to be something really intellectually interactive going on there.
Yeah.
So it's not just residual and it's not just the wind.
So just leave me alone. Be quiet.
You know, amusingly, you know, he is now the owner at this small town donut shop. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's called Cops and Donuts, and he owns it with these eight other officers.
No kidding.
And this shop is also haunted. So, you know, I kind of wonder, you know, he just has also a knack for recognizing ghosts and feeling them. You know, once you have that connection and that established, you know, connection with the other side, I think that you see a lot more.
Oh, I agree
in other
with you.
Places, you
when
know.
You start opening up, it seems like, you know, it's a growth thing, but you have to recognize the fact that it's possible. And then when you start recognizing some of it, it starts flooding in, so it seems.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You said it perfectly.
Where is the coffee shop? Is that in Skagway, Alaska?
No, this one is in Clare, Michigan. He ended up moving from Skagway to Alaska, and they have a little shop that they bought in Clare, Michigan. They were this bakery was going out of business, and then intuitively, all of these cops got together and opened up this new chain donut shop now that's doing really, really well.
That is super. So it's all a chain.
Oh. Yes, yes. Oh, it's opening up. Two or three other shops in Michigan, and they're talking about actually expanding out of state. So,
well, Dunkin' Donuts, look out.
Yeah.
Here they come.
Yeah.
Okay, then how about, this is another strange, intriguing story. I'd like to kind of get a variety in here. But the one that I read entitled The Kid by an undercover officer, and that lends even more credence to it because, you know, they're under strict confidential situations. So let me see, it was in Utah, and he was informed that there was a body in a shaft somewhere in Utah, and he began to investigate that.
Yes, this is a story that was given to me by a military federal officer.
Oh, military.
And he went to this area where there were lots of mine shafts, and I get the feeling it was around the Four Corners, like Colorado, Utah area.
Yeah.
And he was dispatched there on a homicide, and this story is about a reptilian creature, you know, and I'm not as studied about reptilians, but I'm sure that you are. And there's quite a following regarding reptilian people, so to speak.
Yeah.
So the story is about an undercover officer. He goes to an old mine on this homicide, and an informant has told him that someone was shot and dumped down one of the mine shafts. So when he enters the mine, he hears noises, and he thinks it's a child playing around. Mm-hmm. And because old mines can be very unsafe, he tries to call the child out, but has no success. So he pretends to leave, and he instead hides behind this old wooden pillar. And when the child gets closer and closer to him, because he thinks it's a child, it gets so close to the point that he can almost reach out and grab him, and the officer shines his light on him. And it is not a child. It's this greenish, brownish, two-legged, reptilian-looking creature that is nothing like anything he's ever seen before.
It scared the daylights out of him.
He actually does a composite picture, and the picture is in Spirit of the Badge book.
Oh, excellent.
All he could do was run, because it scared the crap out of him.
Oh, yeah.
And he cannot be sure, because it was so dark in the mine, but he thinks that it dove right into the ground through the dirt. He thinks it made a hole. So it was materialized. It wasn't a ghost or anything. It was a solid, material, reptilian animal that he thinks made the hole in the ground.
Yeah, well, we're looking at the picture right now.
Yeah. By just assessing the action from what he wrote, it's my opinion that it is probably interdimensional.
Yeah.
As most people feel about these creatures.
Right.
And
right.
It's not uncommon for them to be in a mine shaft or in caves or underground, because there are supposed to be some of these creatures living underground.
Right, right.
And also they're supposed to be of either extraterrestrial origin or even from inner Earth. I think that there are a couple of species of them, probably more than
right.
just a couple. But some are supposed to be from inner Earth, and some are supposed to be from the planet Nibiru. So it just depends on what he was dealing with. It's hard to say, but these things do exist. As
yeah.
if you listen to what other people have to say, and we're talking across the globe, and people are reporting very similar stories. So you're beginning, as you read these different stories, you know, the typical paranormal seems unbelievable, but now we get Bigfoot stories, and we get upright canid stories, and reptilians. I think we have to take a look at what people are telling us.
Right.
Our reality
right.
is changing.
Well, and when you see all the consistencies.
That's right.
Among a lot of people, you know, that's hard to start lying about
that's
it.
That's right.
You know, when you see consistency like that.
It's frightening. It's frightening. But you have to open
yeah.
your eyes, because there's so much out there that we simply don't understand.
Right.
So that's it's too bad that he had to go through that experience by himself. That's just really
right.
ultimately
right.
frightening. That was an interesting story.
And I'll bet he didn't really visit too many mines after that.
I wouldn't.
Probably said, no, I think I'll stay away from there.
Yeah, you can't pay me enough money. How about this is very ironic and strange and synchronistic, the story about the lost badge.
That's a favorite of mine.
It's amazing.
It's what are the odds?
Exactly.
And, you know, yeah, coincidental things happen. And I like what you said, you know, just a minute ago about things are changing and shifting. And it's kind of like, you know, I call it the paradigm shift.
It is.
You know, I feel like we're in that right now. It just doesn't happen overnight.
That's right.
But things start to change. You start seeing more and more unusual activities and exceptional human experiences,
mm-hmm.
and this is one of them.
That's
with the
right.
lost badge. It's synchronistic in nature. It's a story about a Canadian officer who loses his badge, and he doesn't report it right away. An unexpected assignment occurs, and it prevents him from reporting the loss right away, and he gets dispatched. He's dispatched to investigate some downed trees that are about 100 miles away from where he works. And it's because of a severe storm that rips through the northernmost section of Ontario in Canada. And he was asked to travel to this location and to report the extent of the damage. So he finds the forest, is terribly distressed after the storm. He sees lots of old mossy trees. Limbs, brush, pines have fallen everywhere, kind of chaotically. And he notices an eagle's nest that had toppled down from a tree that had fallen. And he thought, you know, what if there's baby eagles in the nest? And he was really concerned. And he thought that he'd try to get to that nest by climbing over all of these trees, because if there's eagles there, then he could transfer them to a wildlife refuge.
Yeah.
So he climbs over all of this brush and trees, and he, you know, it takes him a while to get there. And when he does, he carefully picks his way through the nest, and he's happy to see there's no eagles in it. That's a good thing.
Yes.
But he notices something shiny and glimmering through the leaves and sticks of the nest. And as he's picking through it, he finds his badge.
What are the chances? What are the odds?
Yeah.
100 miles
100
north.
100 miles, yeah, away from the woods where he lost it in the first place.
Oh, yeah, you know, I'd heard that eagles like shiny things.
Do they?
And the red-tailed hawks, they like shiny things. Hmm. But the odds of the same person who lost the badge
to discover
finding the badge 100 miles, you know, away from where he lost it is pretty unreal.
I
think you'd have a better chance of winning the lottery.
I think so.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
No.
What is the time frame, Ingrid, from when he lost his badge? I thought it was kind of like soon that he was thinking about reporting it the same day, or did he wait for a period of time?
He waited like 3 or 4 days.
Okay.
And he was going to report it, but because he didn't want to get jabbed and snickered at and that kind of a thing, losing his badge, he thought he'd just come across it somewhere. And then he got dispatched on this particular incident, you know, at the forest. So it was about a week.
Oh, about a week. Okay. Even
yeah, about
that,
a week.
Decreases his chances of finding it.
Right.
That time period. That is just amazing. Are we going to be followed by a show or what?
Yeah, apparently Craig is here.
Oh, darn. I guess
we won't
have as much time, but...
Well, that's okay.
We'll just have to have you come back. That's what we're going to do.
Well, thank you so much.
How about...
I did want to let everybody know that they could go to my website. It's called spiritofthebadge.com.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're interested in ordering some books, they can go through Amazon.com as well. And it's in paperback form as well as ebook form. And both books are similar. The first book, called Spirit of the Badge, again, is the independent book. And the second book is called True Police Stories of the Strange and Unexplained. It has many of the stories from the first book, plus some additional stories as well.
Great.
And again, they can go through Amazon.com.
Okay. You know, Ingrid, we've got time for one more story, if you'd like.
Sure.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we got about 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah, we didn't want to shut you down early.
Oh, wonderful.
How about Knocked Right Out of Her Shoes?
That's a weird and freaky story.
It is strange.
Yeah. And, you know, these things are happening more and more often, and we just don't know why.
It's it's almost like a guardian angel is watching this woman, because it seems to defy the laws of physics. What happened to her?
Yeah, she, you know, the name of the story really says it all.
Mm-hmm.
She was seriously knocked right out of her shoes. The officer that shared the story said that he was dispatched to a primary accident, which had like 3 cars involved that had rolled over on a highway. And while he was policing the initial accident, he observes this black 4-door Blazer coming towards them on the other side of the freeway. So there's a median in between. So this Blazer's traveling at the normal speed, but it hits a gawker's vehicle. And what we mean by gawker, vehicles that have this tendency to slow down when they see an accident, they want to see what's going on, so we call them a gawker.
Mm-hmm.
So when that vehicle slows down, the Blazer crashes right into the back end of the gawker vehicle. So it makes a huge bang. The gawker's vehicle hits the median, traveling 60 miles an hour, all sorts of sparks flying, that kind of thing. But then the weirdest thing happens, and this is what the officer explains in the story. He sees the driver of the Blazer, this lady, get out of her vehicle, probably to look at the damage, you know, because she had some severe front-end damage. And then the officer observes another vehicle heading straight towards the Blazer. So this officer is yelling at the lady, get out of the way, get out of the way, you're going to get hit. But this oncoming vehicle hits the Blazer at full speed.
Oh.
And, yeah, it was a mess. And the officer, at the same time, is watching this female driver, you know, who had gotten out of her car, and she just completely disappears underneath the wreck. So he's thinking he's got a fatal accident.
Yeah.
You know, he's thinking the worst. But the freaky thing about this story is the officer, you know, when he immediately goes to police the accident, he observes the female's shoes right next to each other, right where she had been standing, just a set of shoes. And he's thinking she has literally been knocked out of her shoes, and he's looking everywhere. And to this day, the officer can't tell you where the female came from, but she suddenly kind of reappears out of nowhere. She's standing up in the roadway. She's very disoriented and staggering towards the right lane. She almost gets hit by two cars that split just in time to avoid her. And then she kind of falls down on her knees. And long story short, she was perfectly okay. And she didn't even go to the hospital.
She should have been under the truck. She wasn't even under the truck. Her body wasn't there.
No. It was the strangest thing. I mean, even the wrecker driver had witnessed it, and they were both certain that this lady had gotten struck and hit. And, you know, the officer explains, you know, how he found her shoes to her, you know, right where she had been standing, and that she appeared to have been hit so hard that she was knocked right out. And then she informs the officer that she had socks on, too.
But
that
she
no longer had her socks on after the accident.
It was almost like she was just physically removed or transported to another dimension to get out of that sight, that accident.
Yeah. It was the weirdest thing.
And she had no injuries.
Really do happen in police work. They're just not always... Some police are still a little shy and don't always want to, you know, share these kinds of unexplainable incidents. But I think now's the time to share. Like you said, things are changing and things are shifting. And I'm anxious to receive more stories from police officers.
Oh, and I'm anxious to read them.
Is there a third book?
There is a third
book.
Yes.
What is it going to be titled?
I think I'm going to call it Spirit of the Badge 2.
Oh, excellent.
And I'm looking for more stories from police officers or police workers, even family members who know of metaphysical, paranormal, or exceptional occurred with police family members. If they would contact me on my website, spiritofthebadge.com, I will give them a free book. You know, if the story makes the cut and it works out that we can publish that story in the next book, I will give that person a free Spirit of the Badge book.
Wonderful.
Okay, excellent.
Well, I hope you're interested in coming back on. Ingrid would love to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure. Oh,
thank you.
All right. The two books are Spirit of the Badge and True Police Stories of the Strange and Unexplained. The website was spiritofthebadge.com, was it?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes. Okay.
Wonderful.
Ingrid P. Dean, and we are out of time.
Thank you so much, Ingrid.
And
you're welcome.
Thank you very much
for joining
us. Enjoy that nice Hawaii weather.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you, Ingrid.
Have a nice night.
Good night.
Okay, thank you.
Good night.
All right. And so you know what that means.
Spirit Radio is over for another Saturday night.
That's right. And that means that Craig Mosier with the Graveyard Shift is coming right up.
That's right. And thank you, everyone, for listening. You have a good evening. Thank you.
In this one of many possible worlds, all for the best, or some bizarre test. It is what it is, and whatever. Time is still the infinite jest. The arrow flies when you dream. The hours tick away, the cells tick away. The watchmaker keeps to his schemes. The hours tick away, they tick away. The measure of a life is a measure of love and respect. So hard to earn, so easy.